In the second part of our startup stories in partnership with Baltic Ventures, Talk On To Walk On is once again delighted to share a conversational insight into the mindsets of impressive entrepreneurs. We have Rebecca Garcia of Cubode, who are making coding and data analysis much more accessible to small and medium-sized companies. Peter Lydon of Burl, tackling the environmental impact of the fashion industry by allowing customers with one click to trade in used clothing for credit on their favorite brand websites. And Paul Williams of Ittybit, who has created software that tackles problems such as uploading, storing, and converting video, audio, and image files at a massively reduced cost.
I care more about what I think. And if I am making decisions that fulfill me and make me happy, if I make mistakes, I learn. I'm only 30. Fundraising, it's like going to a club as a 17-year-old that has never been to a club. You know kind of like what you're looking for, but you don't know how it works. You have to go between vision and organizing the day-to-day and kind of like being an execution machine. But I do think the vision and setting up the time to share that vision with the rest of the team and other stakeholders constantly is much more important than I ever thought.
Actually, you know, you talked about skill set before. I think your moral set is probably the most important thing in terms of like you both got to agree what's right and what you're prepared to do and what you're not. So I guess my big frustration is all about people who say what they're going to do rather than talk about what they've done. There's always times we disagree, right? And I think it'd be wrong if we didn't, because we wouldn't really be that passionate about what we're doing if we just sort of let each other get on with it. The power of the team and the collective is amazing, really. You know, 10 people working together is like 100 people working apart, right?
You should hire people who are better than you, but you should also understand the job and understand the role. And yes, I think if you're not able to basically do a lot of things on your own, I think you'll really struggle. You shouldn't invest in somebody who needs the advice. Like, do you know what I mean? You're trying to find investments where, if I didn't invest, the founder would do this anyway. In terms of things that really impacted me in school, I was always entrepreneurial. I was the guy who would buy sweets at the store and sell them for a markup at lunch, right? Like that. I've always been like that.
Even if you think their business idea may not be directly relevant to you, their stories and mindset insights are definitely for everyone. You will also get to see our passion for business and why we have invested in the Baltic Ventures Tech Accelerator, and how the power of conversation and community created at Baltic Ventures has collectively provided these founders the courage and confidence to walk on towards their dreams. If you love what you hear and want to learn more about becoming an investor or applying for the next Baltic Ventures cohort, go to balticventures.uk. If you want to learn more or connect with any of the brilliant businesses featured in this series, all details are in their show notes. We're proud to be playing a small part in the journey of these fabulous founders. So let's talk on to walk on with Rebecca, Paul, and Peter, and let's see where it leads. Rebecca Garcia, welcome to Talk On To Walk On, our podcast. We just have fun and games with our setup. So I hope you're feeling much more relaxed now and ready for a great conversation about how fabulous Cubode is and how fabulous you are. I want to start by acknowledging that this stat actually reassured me and probably will scare you, that 99% of the population do not know how to code. And it, to me, it's a scary word. And Patrick and I very much fall into that bracket. What a platform we have mastered, though, and most nearly every business that we know will have mastered, is Canva. And I know that Canva is worth over $1 billion. And I know that you are planning to make your coding platform so popular that it will equate to the Canva usage. Tell us how you're going to get us all on board with coding.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, first of all, for having me on the podcast. An honor to be here and so grateful for the opportunity. So thank you for having me. And yeah, I mean, I do love the story of Melanie Perkins, and the analogy with Canva is something that we keep quite close in the company. For us, Cubode is a platform that helps knowledge workers use data professionally, without the need to learn how to code a code language, because you're very right. 99% of the population cannot code. We live in a coding illiterate society, and knowledge workers are 1/3 of the working population. These are people in roles like software developers, engineers, scientists, researchers, product managers, consultants, analysts, and many more. Literally 1/3 of the working population. We focus specifically on marketing-oriented product managers in smaller teams. That's similar to how Canva started focusing on releasing yearbooks, but we focused on helping these marketing-oriented product managers harness their data. They know very well that data is a very important part of their role, their job, but they find it really hard to do data analysis themselves. That's because they haven't got the technical skills to do it, and they normally use complicated tools that they haven't got the capacity to really master, and there's no IT departments in their companies. So they end up spending endless hours working inefficiently with tools like Excel to generate a few graphs and end up repeating this process again and again and again. So basically, they don't use the company's data effectively to make informed decisions. And we see, especially now post AI in the market, we see this is a huge problem because there's a new wave of businesses that are much smaller, much more nimble, much faster, much quicker to innovate and penetrate new markets. So we need a new tool. What's the solution? We created a generative AI no-code platform that makes programming for data harnessing easier and universal, similar to what Canva has done to the creative market, where you don't no longer need to hire a editor, designer, a photographer, or whatever you name it. You can just do it there and then on the platform. Well, Qubit is doing the exact same thing to data harnessing. You no longer need to hire a database developer, engineer, data analyst, data scientist. You can do it there and then in one platform. And Qubit is, or we've built it to be, easier than Excel and as powerful as Python. So that's kind of like in a nutshell what Qubit is, and
Rebecca, that's really good to hear, because my experience in my corporate career is that, and I have worked for SMEs as well as large corporates, you get overrun by data. So we produce tons and tons of data, but the commercial and the marketing people and the finance people within those organizations, a lot of them don't, as you say, don't know what to do with it. And I think I'm right in saying that Qubode, at least initially, is being targeted at SMEs who probably don't have the budget or aren't big enough to justify one of these very large enterprise-wide solutions like SAP, and would turn to something like Qubode. Am I right?
Yeah, 100%. I think the learning that we had when we started, we did beta testing with about 800 users, both coders and non-coders, about 50% of each. And we did a lot of customer discovery with people that wanted to use the platform. And we realized that big corporations needed the data solution platforms, but they have some solutions they can use or they can tap into, the Tableau's or Power BI's or like so many different kinds of tools they can use. But the reason they can use those is they have a data team in-house that's centralized to their organizations, because they're normally like 400, 500 people onwards. So they're big companies and they have a data team in the company that does that. Now, inside of those big companies, there's other problems, like the data team cannot keep up with all the requests from all the different teams. And that's also another problem. But in smaller companies, they literally are blind in a market where their competitors have laser vision. Like, they can predict which customers are going to buy what at what time, what's the best time to post, what is the best campaign to run, who are the best influencers. They can do sentiment analysis on comments of social media channels, and the small players, the guys we serve, don't have a clue how to join two data sets. That they don't understand what AI really does, what generative AI means, what's the difference between AI and generative AI, what are the implications for their business, what things should they be looking at implementing today. They don't know what's coming. And while the big enterprises now are implementing different solutions that leverage all of these technologies, these guys have Nothing. They don't even have provision data analyst in-house.
So you have an immense task, Rebecca, because you have to simplify something that is incredibly complicated. It's like reverse engineering, I guess. But at the same time, keeping an eye on the market and the evolution of the technology. Give us a basic example of an SME company that should be using Cubode right now and signing up at like a fraction of the price to be able to do some of this really important analysis themselves.
So we normally are the most useful in companies that have 1 to 19 people and they're doing at least 300,000 in revenue, sometimes 2.5, 300,000 in revenue annually. If they're in that size, they have about 5 people. And in that organization, there has to be someone that we call the non-techie techie, which is the person that is not fully coding proficient, but they have tried to learn a little bit of Python, or they might have tried to learn a little bit of SQL. They hate Excel, but they have to use it. They hate it not because of being able to make the most of it. This Excel is an immense tool. Like, you can do so many things. You can do VBA, you can do automation, you can even pull data from different databases. They don't know the full extent of it, so they don't really like it. And the challenge they have is automation. So with Cubode, they can bring data from different sources. So let's say, for example, a company of ours in the paid pilot, they're an e-commerce store in Shopify. They have data in Shopify, in Meta, in TikTok. They actually do most of their advertising on TikTok. Mm-hmm. They have a CSV spreadsheet where they track the returns, because they get returns from people that they sell things to, and they have to track that somewhere. So they add it on a CSV. And they can bring all those data sources onto the platform with simple connectors that we've built to their own tools that they use. So they can connect to Shopify using single sign-on. They can connect to their TikTok ads to bring all that data, to their Meta account to bring all the ads information, campaign, ad sets, whatever you name it. They bring it on and they can ask Cubode, or the vision is for Cubode to essentially be able to allow them to transform any commercial question into an actual fully built workflow they can use repeatedly. So they can come into the platform and press, okay, refresh. I have my dashboard for the main KPIs I need to track in the business. So for us, that's like the bare minimum that a business should have, which is the health of the business. Where is the money going? How much is that money making? And what are the most profitable ways of making more money? Those are the skeleton of things. But when I'm trying to explain this to customers, for them to understand, is having that is like walking on your underwear in Paris Fashion Week. Like, you don't have the full set just yet. You have the underwear, you can walk, but there's other people doing much fancier, much better things that you can tap into as you grow. But you need the skeleton first. So those businesses are the ones that need it most now. And you said it before, it's such an important common denominator to everything we do. Our biggest task at Cubode is simplification. Simplifying the whole process to the bare minimum. So anyone can do it. Anyone can use the platform to answer the data questions they have.
But I'm guessing like Canva, sorry, Patrick, I'll let you go in. I'm fascinated because my knowledge is so basic, but I'm guessing like Canva, the more you use it, I would imagine it becomes a little bit addictive because you've simplified it so well that I'm guessing it will build my confidence the more I use it. And I'll get a hit of dopamine and want to use it more. And like you say, if it benefits my business, then boom.
That's it. I think the key is that Canva at the end creates digital assets, and we live in a digital economy. Most of the advertising is on digital channels, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, your paid ads on Google, all over. Like, even if you go to Bing on whatever platform, you need some sort of visual. We are in a visual-driven economy. They tap into that asset. But behind all of those assets and all those views is data. So there's a huge need to understand the data behind all your marketing efforts, all your product efforts. What are your customers doing inside of your app? That is all data. So the underlying problem below the harnessing of data is the scarcity of coders. And being able to give them a platform that groups generative AI with no code, which is the accessibility, Gen AI gives them the democratization because they can ask a question and we transform that question into the code. And the no-code side transforms that written code into something they can use, customize, and adapt to their own solution.
Amazing. And it's blocks, isn't it? There's templates there, isn't there? And it's very visual and engaging as opposed to overwhelming with numbers and figures and symbols. And
it's still more overwhelming than we want it to be, but we're working super hard on UX and simplifying and making it as lean as possible. That's the key part. Many of the platforms that we've seen in the market are overwhelming. And our customers tell us, like, I don't want it to be yet another data platform that I cannot use, that I am not. Literally, they say, even with a little bit of embarrassment, I don't want to fail at using another platform. Like, I need these for my business. They don't want to feel stupid. Like, they want to feel, because they're not stupid. They know what they want. Most of them know what they want. They just need it building. And for those that don't know what they want with the data, which they are, that's where the generative AI comes in. Because we can give them suggestions. Okay, based on this data that you have here, this is what other people are looking at. This is what you should have for your business.
My mind is working overtime with this, Rebecca, because I'm seeing this in schools, just addressing that inequality an accessibility problem. If you're simplifying it to a point where these kids may actually start to take up, I mean, it's a terrible term, computer science. It's quite an old-fashioned term. I don't know whether Spain has similar issues or other countries. I know that you've lived in. What is something like Cuba going to make it much more appealing to children to take up?
100%. And again, bringing back the same Canva example, one of the main things we want to do with the subscription business is once we have enough of a volume, we want to give Cubic for free to schools, high schools, universities, so they can use it, leverage it, learn, and actually improve the learning curriculum. Because one of the biggest challenge for schools, and we've also talking to councils here in Liverpool and Manchester, and the biggest problem they have is that they don't have enough teachers. Teachers themselves don't know how to code and they're teaching a curriculum of things they don't really understand.
Just on that, just also talk about schools generally, I'm going to hone in on females and young women in particular, because again, the take up is not only low just across the board, but particularly low with young girls taking up computer science subjects. And you've just addressed one big problem, is the teachers can't keep up, and there isn't they can't keep up, they're not incentivized to teach it, and B, the kids probably know more than them. So that there is a problem that massively needs addressing there. You, as a tech female founder, you must acknowledge how incredibly inspirational you are, because you're one of a very small number. I know Patrick's got some stats on tech founders, and how does that make you feel? Are you frustrated, or are you just thinking, do you know what? Another problem I'm just going to take on and solve.
The latter. The answer is the latter. I think, like, honestly, when I was growing up, I did my A-levels for, like, the technology side of things. In Spain, it's slightly different. So you do, like, scientific, technological high school or college levels to go into engineering. My dad's an engineer, my brother's an engineer. So in my house, he was doing engineering or why are you going to university? It was either engineering or medicine. And I didn't want to really be a doctor. So I actually ended up doing my A-levels to enroll into engineering university. I enrolled into engineering university and then I canceled the first week. After the first week, I canceled my subscription. I canceled it and I moved to London. When I was 18, I didn't speak a word of English, by the way. And I lived in a small village in the north of the country. And when I mean small, I mean like 5,000 to 7,000 people, no more. So the way I think about me I ended up going to university, did business marketing, and like I've had a wonderful career. But one thing that I do reflect on is that first week when I went to university in the engineering, there was 3 girls in my class. Me and another 2.
How many in the class?
About 300, 400. I don't know. Like, wow. How many. So one of the things that I wish I had when I was growing up, and I am so bullish on the belief. I really believe that we're taking step by step, little steps to make a better future for tomorrow, whenever we get there, is we are seeing more women like Melanie Perkins in positions of high success. And those are the ones that are paving the way. And having actually a role model that has been there and done it is super important. I did not have that. I've never had that kind of need as a young woman growing up that I need to see other successful women. But I did grow up in a matriarchy. In my house, my mom was the boss. My grandmother was the boss. My great-grandmother was the boss before her. So it's always been women-driven. And I have never been scared of leadership because of that. I've seen them running businesses. I've seen them closing deals. I've seen them having commercial agreements and going to the bank and doing whatever they needed to do. But I didn't have, and that's quite sad, positions where I thought, oh, my God, look at that woman. She's really high up. Like, and when you say, like, I'm inspired, I don't feel like I'm inspiring at all. I just feel like I'm doing what I want to do. And I feel like that's a privilege to me because I grew up in a society that didn't have those role models. But I feel it should just be the norm. Like, I can't believe that we're speaking about inspiring equality. Like, diversity fosters growth. In the whole
group, 2024, it's crazy. It really is. But it is the reality. And you know what, Rebecca, you are inspiring. You're being very modest and very humble, but you are inspiring because, like you say, we just don't see them. And even, you know, the likes of Melanie Perkins, CEO of Canva, I don't know how big her profile is, but she's not. People never talk about her. They'll historically talk about Steve Jobs or Elon Musk, but she's 36. I think she's only in her 30s, I think. 36 from when I last recollection. And you know, she's just insanely inspirational, yet she doesn't get the kudos, I don't think, and coverage that men of her equivalent receive. And it's an ongoing problem. Maybe I'm doing a disservice on that because I know there is a lot of work going on in terms of the industry and tech awards and women's awards and, you know, to recognise. So there is definitely work going on, and there are many female founders who are out there looking to inspire. And so I do believe it is going to change, but we definitely need those role models for the next generation.
Sorry, and of course,
it starts early, and I know there has to be a disproportionate effort to get women and girls studying STEM subjects, and I know we all know that there are efforts in that area to get science, technology, engineering, and maths up there as popular subjects for females to study. Because, I mean, you talked about stats earlier, Michelle. One of the stats is that something like 19%, only 19% of the UK workforce, female workforce, are in digital tech. Yeah. And there are 50%, as we know, male, female, 50-50, but only 19% in the digital tech workforce. And then that stat, you know, in terms of founders, female founders, that stat gets even worse, where there are only 15% are female founders. So if you look at tech startups, only 15% are started up by women. The third stat, which is, I have to refer to this because it's quite a complicated one, which I think is even worse, was that back in 2022, 73% of deals that were concluded by VCs, venture capital firms, had absolutely no women at all on their founding teams. And so you can sort of trace a line through that in terms of where we need to get to in terms of leveling up, not only the tech space, but generally, you know, if we move into talking about, you know, founders and startups, to be getting females better represented in that space too.
Yeah. For me, I think one of the key parts there, and diversity fosters growth. in every international team I've worked in or I've led, diversity brings difference of thought, and difference of thought gets you to a better outcome in the majority of situations, much better outlook of success if you have a diverse thinking team. So what I think women need is more funding. Female founders need funding. They just need money. They tend to be a lot more frugal to spending that money. And in turn, that frugality means they have also extended runways and more likelihood of success with that funding. And these are stats out there to back up what I'm saying as well. They need more funding, but they also need more investors that are female. And these investors that are female also need to have more positive unconscious bias. So one of the things in raising venture capital for women-led organizations is the unconscious bias. And it's nature. Like, I get on probably better with someone that is from my similar background than I do with someone that is 30 years older than me and has a completely different outlook in life. It's just what it is. So investors really need to make a conscious effort for that unconscious bias to come up and be aware of it, and then have a really big effort, because it's shocking how many female investors there are. Like, there's so little female investors. And that's just like, it makes no sense. And even when you look deeper into the venture capital firms, normally female investors are in operational roles or associate roles. They're not at partnership positions. So that reflection of the leadership position for women is also reflected inside of the investment firms, which in turn reflects in the kind of decisions that are made at partnership level to invest in more female founders. And actually do an active role about talking about it, because I do think you raised an important point there, Michelle. Like, we don't talk enough about how great of a success these stories are, because there's so many brilliant women out there that do great things, and we don't speak about it. So it's having the women that do it and kill it and speaking about how great they are.
And Rebecca, even calling out situations where females aren't adequately presented. And I'm going to indulge Michelle a little bit here, because it was Michelle who drove us to invest in, participate in the Baltic Ventures as angel investors. It was Michelle who wanted, as a female, to be a female investor. And then to look out for female founders in the businesses that were presenting to us. And we'll end up talking about Baltic Ventures in a minute, but as a slightly amusing but serious aside, I remember, Rebecca, so clearly when you walked into that room to pitch. Unfortunately, Michelle had walked out of the room about half an hour earlier to attend another event which was connected to females in business. And you walked into the room to pitch, and you paused and looked around the table, and you said, "There are no women here."
Yeah.
And you were looking at a boardroom of male investors, and you called us out. You called out the situation. That was absolutely the right thing to do, and we all squirmed a bit in our seats. But you know, it then started a conversation. You did your pitch, a fantastic pitch, and obviously a very successful pitch. You walked out, and we all had a conversation, and we've ended up with 9 businesses in the 2023 cohort. I think 5 of which have female founders, and so that participation is great. But we do need, men and women need to be talking about it more, definitely. And you guys need to be calling situations out.
Yeah, 100%, Rebecca, brilliant. And but I do think, I mean, again, we could do a whole podcast on this. There is a female mentality, and it's sort of that we don't self-promote. We just get on with stuff, you know? And, you know, again, the psychology around that is really interesting and probably historical. But I do think as females, you do need to put yourself out there. You really do, and make that time. And I just want to applaud you, Rebecca, for coming on the podcast to do that. We have yourself and Kate. We are chasing the others. And I'm just going to say it, you know? I know everybody's busy, but it's seizing the moment. And I know people have got to be really diligent and careful about where they spend their time, because it's a crazy time for you all, you know, seeking out investment and funding. But it is taking those opportunities to put yourself out there as a female founder and share your story, because it will inspire. And as we do with our podcast, we just say, if we hit one person and it makes a difference, then our job is done. So I just want to applaud you, Rebecca, as a tech founder, as a female founder, and for coming on and sharing your story. So thank you.
No, thank you. Honestly, don't thank me, because thank me in 10 years when we've built a $20 billion business and we're like, look, now we're sending all this money to all these schools and they can access what we have, and we've leveled the playing field for all the businesses that can do. Because to be honest, I think like it's super important to speak about what we're doing, but something that's really, really, really important to me personally is that you speak about the impact you're making, but actually make the impact. So there's a lot of people out there just talking about what they're doing, and there's a part of like documenting, and there's another part of kind of like spreading the word and putting yourself out there. For potentially for the last half a year or almost a year, I've not been active posting anything because I have no time. Like, I literally have no time. I'm so busy in the business and in the weeds of the product and the customers and the investment, and that I have no time. So whenever I do get the chance to actually share with the world what I'm doing, I do take a lot of introspection time to really think about what I want to share and not just say anything that comes to my head. Because you're very right, like there might be someone in whatever city or village, they're looking at your post and they're thinking, oh my God, I'd love to do that when I'm older or whatever. And I do think that's a huge responsibility to think about what we're saying and actually share the good things and the bad things of the journey, not just say, look how great I'm doing. Or because it's like normally, like for, I don't know for the rest of people, but in tech startup world, the house is always on fire. You're like throwing fires, like, and then trying to make the stage look good so you don't see the fire around you. But yeah, like, what I'm trying to get at is it's important to share, but for me, it's important to share something that actually makes an impact. So talk the talk and walk the walk like you have in the podcast, but actually do the walking. Because one thing is to say I'm a female tech founder and or a deep tech, Gen AI, whatever. Another thing is actually this is my product. This is my customers. This is what we're doing. And having something real and tangible that people can see. So what I'm saying is, don't bullshit people, because bullshit gets called out. Just be frank, be honest, speak about the impact you're making while making it, not the impact you want to make and you aspire to make.
It, amazing.
Absolutely, Rebecca. And it is so difficult. You know, the when you read business books about successful CEOs, there's obviously CEOs have to be visionary. They have to be looking forward. They have to be inspiring their teams. But those are CEOs of established, mature businesses. When you're the CEO of a startup, you're absolutely caught up in the day-to-day. Every now and then, as you have a few minutes ago, you can say what your vision is for 10 years' time, 15 years' time. But very quickly, you get back to the reality of actually putting out the fires and doing what you have to do now. I'm going to ask you a question then, which is, it's not today and it's not 10 years time, but let's say it's the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. We know you're in the middle of a fundraising process. So tell us a little bit about that and what your ambitions are in the short term. Yeah, like I say, 6, 9, 18 months.
Yeah, so we've just secured our lead, signed the term sheets and everything. I've been drowned in due diligence work for the past 2 weeks. Didn't know how hard it was going to be. Again, also, one thing that I would say for anyone trying to raise capital, probably don't do it in this kind of market. If you can avoid it, just don't do it. It's going to be so time consuming. Do it when there's like a bountiful market. It's so much easier. I think it's going to be so much easier. The upside is if we've done it now, we'll be able to do it when there's a bountiful market much easier. But you don't know, like, it kind of like when I was trying to explain fundraising to a friend of mine, it's fundraising, it's like going to a club as a 17-year-old that has never been to a club. You know kind of like what you're looking for, but you don't know how it works. You don't know when you're going to walk out with someone or you're not going to walk out with someone or what's going to happen. You have to kind of like figure out as you go along and like talk to a lot of people. That's fundraising. You don't want to walk out of the club with the ugliest guy. You want to make sure you go with someone decent and a nice human being that you can be with for the next 10 years. So we've just closed, closed our lead investor. And now I'm talking to a lot of angels, a lot of funds to fill the rest and kind of like configuring the cap table. And all of these terms probably would sound like crazy to other people, but it's taking us an age to get here. And one thing that does get me really excited for the next 12 months is hiring. Now, for the next 12 months, giving the chance to people that have the hunger to an ambition to learn in tech, in the Liverpool ecosystem or in the Northwest ecosystem to actually make an impact is something that really excites me. Like Davide is our junior software engineer and he started about 3 months ago and it's crazy to see how much he's learned, how much he's grown, how much he understands about the platform. He came from a boot camp in Manchester and he was talking to us yesterday saying like, I'm talking to my boot camp co-workers, my bootcamp's partners, like who he did it, the bootcamp with, and they're telling me that they're doing this specific task in their company. And I'm like, I've done everything here. I've gone from 0 to 2,000 miles per hour in like a fraction of a second. And we can't afford for him to not go at that speed. Like he has to make a big contribution. It's a complicated product. So he's joined a special startup, but I'm so excited about hiring and giving people that need that chance, the opportunity. It's important to us to really select people that match on culture and really have the humble mentality with the big ambition to drive this forward. And you said before, you have to go between vision and organizing the day-to-day and kind of like being an execution machine. But I do think the vision and proactively setting up the time to share that vision with the rest of the team and other stakeholders constantly is much more important than I ever thought. Like you have to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. And people disengage and people forget and they're like, oh, but what did you say about this? I'm like, well, this, this is where we're going and this is kind of like how it's going. And that evolves, that vision evolves over time. And that proactive effort to write it down, document it, get it out of your head and like document it and share it and getting people to give you their thoughts on it and kind of like enrich that vision. It honestly, I think it's one of the core strengths of a early stage business is the narrative. Like, what are you actually working on? What are you sharing with the rest of the world? What are your employees thinking about how you're doing? And sharing that, it's much more important than I ever thought it would be.
But what I love about you is you bring it back, probably a little bit what you do at Qboge. You bring it back to simplicity, bring it back to the basics. Take a pause, have a minute, remind yourself why you're there, remind yourself why you're creating this product, remind yourself why you're doing running this business, what the vision is. I absolutely just, honestly, I could genuinely listen to you all day, but your mindset is insane. And I loved your how you touched on the females in your family, but you were exposed to it. But it's the mindset that I'm fascinated by and where that came from.
I feel myself super lucky, like extremely, extremely fortunate to have lived through the experiences that I lived growing up. So I'm probably giving a bit too much personal information, but my parents had a business and import rights to the whole of Spain and the Canary Islands. And they were doing very well at some point. I was in private school. My brother was in private school. And then they went bankrupt when I was about 12, 13. They lost everything. And when I mean lost everything, they lost houses. They had like everything you can imagine that goes wrong with a business went wrong. And that also affected their marriage. That also affected our household as a family. And I lived through that between the time of like 12 to 16, 17. It shaped who I am. It completely shaped who I am. Because when I was, before 12, I was already aware of how much money was flowing into the house, how like the lifestyle change that we went through was massive. It was a drop. I could feel the drop. I felt the drop, and I lived through that drop for like 4 or 5 years. So, and everything that happens when a business goes wrong, if a business goes wrong, it's not just the business going wrong, it's the legal battle that you get into and the emotional detachment that you have to go through to say, okay, that's failed, let's move on. And I saw my parents go through that. So how it affected my mother, my, like the whole thing that happens through it. I am so, so lucky. And I mean this in like the best of ways, to have had nothing growing up. And by nothing, I mean like, the, I don't know, like the type of shopping, like, it's just like, it's going to sound like so sad, but the measuring how much you spend on your shopping at the end of the week and going to grocery store with a specific budget of what you need to buy and how much money you have and seeing something's changed price and you're like, I can't afford that. Mm-hmm. Like I switch for something else because we can't really afford that for this week. And then moving to London, learning English, saving money to go to university myself the year after, and like saving a pot of money from living abroad, being a swimming teacher and an au pair at the same time in London, learning English. Then I did university, learned all the two languages, came to the UK, the hub group. I didn't know anything about I had worked in an agency in marketing in Madrid before, but I had no idea about digital marketing and learning. And for me, one of the things that's always kind of like embedded in my head is, well, first, how hard can it be? If anyone does it, how hard can it be? And second, what's the worst that can happen? We lose it all. And that's that experience that I went through growing up has made me much more risk taker. Because if you lose it all, the worst that can happen in my mind is I have to go and get, I don't know, a job in a factory and work in a factory in 8 hours. I think that's a great life. Yeah. Like, I don't think, like, not having the worries that I have today, for example, do your shift, go home, have your family, food on the table, roof over your head. I did an immense amount of work without realizing to be happy. Like, I am a happy person. I'm such an optimistic, because when you've lived through what having nothing means, you stop being afraid of it. I'm not afraid of losing it all, because losing it all, what is losing it all in these days? Like, I am a woman in Europe. I have a great job. I speak 4 languages. I have a great degree, great wealth of knowledge. What's the worst that can happen to me? So that adversity of risk that many people have in many things makes them scared of taking decisions. And for me, I'm so lucky to have gone through that without wanting to, because I'm not scared of what's the worst that can happen. Do I get ridiculized and I start making public appearances saying, oh, I want to build a decacorn? And who's going to remember that in 3 years if I fail? Probably neither will I. Do you know what I mean?
And, you know, again, Rebecca, what an incredible story, an incredible resilient mindset from, and like you say, what is those brilliant nuggets of advice in there? What's the worst that can happen? You know, I've been there. I've been down at the bottom. There's no, I can't. And it wasn't so bad. It was okay. Not a place I really want to stay. But if the shit hits the fan, it's not so bad. And, you know, I love you.
But it's the truth. Like, I do think many people, and I do actually believe the reason why they're so scared is because they care about what others think about them. Yeah. I couldn't care less. Well, I mean, I care about what I think about myself, what my mom thinks about me, not so much, sometimes not so much. What people I love care about me, but even those that love me, I care more about what I think. And if I am making decisions that fulfill me and make me happy, if I make mistakes, I learn. I'm only 30.
And it's incredibly refreshing. And that's why you will succeed. You will. And then you'll get there and then you'll go, oh, I'll have a go at this now. I'll have a go at that now. You will all, just to warn you, because I have a similar mindset, maybe not as resilient as you, but it's not far off. I don't think I recognize a lot of what you're saying there. Patrick, I'm conscious of time. I mean, you know, it hasn't followed the regular structure, but I think what I was just saying to Rebecca was that she's answering a lot of the questions that we would be posing around mindset. She's talked about, we haven't specifically talked about the benefits of Baltic Ventures, but you did talk about what I loved was the talent program. That talent program is pretty special, isn't it? Again, it's something I think that they evolved with a view to supporting the founders to find the right talent to fit your team. So again, another incredible benefit from Baltic Ventures. Is that one of the key things for you?
So I think one of the key things for me on Baltic is, well, first of all, the money, because as I said before, it's like women need money, that we need funding. Without the money, you can't really do many things, or you do them much slower than you could with money. You can still do them. Remember, I come from not having any, so you can still do it. But the money is one, but the second one would be the community, like having a community of like-minded CEOs that are out there doing it in the same roller coaster that you are. And the third one is the support from both the coaches. All the coaches have been like massive in that. What I explained before about Qubo being an enabling platform, Ricky Onger is one of the coaches in the program. She's so brilliant, so talented. Like she works with Stride, play for different VC firms in London that are like so inspirational in terms of what they're doing and the companies that they have in their portfolios and the success. And she said to us, she asked us these questions. She says, so do people learn the skill in Qubo and take it somewhere else, or do they take Qubo with them? And that literally exploded our head. We were like, no, they take it with them. And that one question that we had through like 9 hours of meeting in the Standard in London in front of King Cross literally made the whole change on the narrative and has been so substantial to how we are marketing it now and bringing all the paying customers into the platform because of that specific sentence. So the coaches, the community, the money, and of course, all the exposure and the amazing team that is behind Baltic, who I call Claire, poor woman. Whenever I need it, it's often that is not normally working hours.
She's amazing. She's so incredibly invested, isn't she? She really is.
She's unbelievable. See, honestly, she's unbelievable. I remember about 2 months before they launched Baltic Ventures, I sat with Claire. I went to an event in Manchester and she was in the event and we met in that event. And about a week later, she met with me in 92 Degrees in a Baltic Triangle. And I went through everything in the business, just like this talk. I was just like, boom, 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 boom. This is what I want to do. This is the financial. This is how it's going to be massive. And I said, people say I'm crazy. And she said to me, you're not crazy. This is crazy. Let's get you funding that you need. And since then, like, it's been a phenomenal journey together.
Fantastic. What a testimonial. Honestly, Patrick, is there anything you can think? We haven't done the Dragon's Den. Do you have time for Dragon's Den and Apprentice?
I haven't watched The Apprenticeship. I've only seen snippets of Dragon's Den, not much. But I know what it's about.
That's fine, Rebecca, because we asked this question to all the others, and some of them like one, some of them like the other, and some of them like you haven't really watched them much at all.
I'm both a part of like an early stage founder is explaining to your family what you're doing. Like most of our close relatives think we're lost, and they ask, "Are you okay? Are you okay? Do you need help?" Can we help you?
When they
saw the video from Baltic Ventures demo day, they said, oh, it's like Dragon's Den. I was like, well, kind of, I guess it's similar, but not specifically like that setting all day every day. But yeah, I think in that regard it helps bring the awareness of the business, kind of selling a piece of the business. And by the way, like I didn't even know when I was eight, so I was in London when I was 18, and then I moved to Ireland and I worked in a town called Greystones, and I was au pair there. And I met a amazing woman. She was the auntie of the family I was au pairing for. She's called Siobhan Freegard, and she's OB or MB, I'm not sure. But she had just sold netmoms.co.uk, which is a huge company. And we were in Ireland. And I came over to her and I said, Siobhan, can I, because she had taken us out for an Indian. I said, can I pay for my part? Because I wasn't part of the family. And she looked at me and said, don't be daft. You're not paying for this. I've just sold my business. Not going to pay for this. And I said, you what? So I just sold my business. And I said, for how much? My mind started going like, what? You can sell a business? And she told me how much. And I said, I don't believe it. Show me. And she showed me the bank account because she literally had just sold it. I was like, oh, I know I want to go into business.
That is a brilliant example of a conversation where you've been ballsy enough to ask her. I bet she didn't have many people asking her, you know, that very direct question. How much? And show me how you did it. Brilliant. Yeah.
Show me the money.
Is this real? Because so many people, always say, oh, yeah, I've got this money. I'm like, do you?
Do you really? We're going to be having fun editing this because how are we going to get nuggets from it? There's so many. There are so many nuggets. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you,
Q-Code, absolutely smashing it and becoming that billion-dollar company that you truly believe will happen. You know, why the hell not? With your attitude and your love of life and your mindset, honestly, I don't doubt you at all. Thank you so much, Rebecca. We are so thrilled to be joining you on the edge of your journey and watching you grow and evolve and smash it in business as a tech founder. Thank you for today. Thank you for your inspiration. And thank you on behalf of all of those young females who will potentially listen to this and take a step forward to becoming a tech founder of the future. So thank you.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
Speak soon. Take care, Rebecca. Bye-bye.
Bye, you too.
Adios.
Adios, chicos. Adios.